From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. The Iowa legislature is back in session. Lawmakers gaveled in this morning, promising an abbreviated session focused on finding savings within state government. But while leaders are zeroed in on the budget, other members want to talk about gay marriage, driving with cell phones, gambling at bars, and concealed weapons permits. Leaders from both political parties discuss their legislative agendas next on The Exchange. But first, the news. Live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. Good morning. The Iowa legislature is back in session. They gaveled in at 10 o'clock this morning. This is expected to be a shortened session, only 80 days rather than the typical 100 days, as the legislature tries to save money and looks for other cost-cutting measures as the session continues. The Democrats are in clear control in the Senate, in a majority of 32 to 18, and in the House, they control the House by 56 to 44. Beginning part of this program, we're going to speak to the leaders of the House. We've got Democratic House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of Des Moines and Republican House Minority Leader Craig Paulson of Hiawatha. Senate leaders will join us for the second half of the program. Gentlemen, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, let me ask you, the speeches this morning focused largely on the budget, the fact that the state is You come into the session facing about a $500 million shortfall in revenue compared to what had been promised in spending. Now, that doesn't mean you have to stick to those past budget promises. Representative McCarthy, let me begin with you. How do you close that gap?
Well, first of all, you're correct. It's going to be a several hundred million dollar budget issue we're facing this year. We don't know the exact number. It depends on kind of what assumptions you bring to it. But what you do is you roll up your sleeves and you try to look at the priorities that you have and try to do your best. And for our part, we believe that education, particularly K-12 and healthcare, particularly for the most vulnerable Iowans, are the priorities to try to keep. And then also public safety. But then once you move beyond that, you have to really tighten the belt, which is what a lot of middle-class families are doing. To try to lessen the burden of the budget this year, we embarked on a pretty aggressive interim committee called Government Reorganization. And they came out with a recommendation that passed unanimously, led by Representative Masher on the Democratic side and Representative Strike on the Republican side. And we're very pleased about that. That's about several hundred million dollars in savings. We don't know the exact amount yet. And the governor, on his part, produced some executive branch things that he can do on his own, absent legislative action, to the tune of about $128 million. We think conservatively, a combination of his executive branch proposals and legislative proposals, will have about $250 million in savings. We're going to try to push that fairly early in the session. And so it may take us 4 weeks or 5 weeks, but early as we can in the session, because when we respond to the governor's budget, which are with our legislative targets, we're going to try to incorporate the savings that we're going to realize because of our government reorganization, thereby lessening the negative impact of our budget targets as the committees begin their work. And so that should help out quite a bit, I say. And then, of course, you just go through line item by line item, and you make it all work in the end. But I think the government reorganization plan we're going to have will be the largest in this history. The state will help us meet our budget challenge so we can balance our budget this year.
We'll talk about a couple of those proposals specifically, but first, Representative Paulson, majority Democrats have suggested that they are going to balance the budget at the end of the session without raising taxes. Do you suspect then that there will be fees that go up, or if they do repeal a tax credit or put caps on tax credits, do you consider that a tax increase?
Well, repeal of a tax credit is a tax increase for somebody. I mean, there's no question about that. I think any monies that are realized from that need to be poured back into some sort of broad-based tax relief, whether it's income or sales or back into the property tax system, which, this talk about balancing the budget without raising taxes, we didn't have to go back into history long ago. The governors across the board cut, raised property taxes on Iowans. So the budget was not balanced or is not balanced on the back of, it was balanced on the back of the property taxpayer. And that's one of the things that Republicans believe we need to address. But I think as far as the budget is concerned, I mean, you're going to see out of House Republicans continuation of what we've been doing for the last year. And that is we'll be going through the budget line by line. We'll be working hard in the budget subcommittees, and we'll be identifying opportunities and bringing those forward to save money and create a more efficient, open government. Some of those ideas will be accepted, my hope is. Some of them won't be. I mean, that's our role in the process, and we're committed to doing it.
Some of these government reorganization ideas that come, I'm going to talk about them in generality, and some of them come from the governor's private consultant, some come from the committee, but some are very controversial. Closing a mental health institution, closing a correctional facility, paying for state troopers with road construction money, merging certain state offices. Is there a chance that these things will actually happen, Representative McCarthy, or is it something that sounds good on paper, and then when you try to hammer out the details, people can't get behind it?
Globally, we have enough reorganization proposals on the table that when we whittle them down at some point, we realize there won't be consensus with all of them. That's why we think we're going to get to around $250 million, but even though there might be 500 or 600 initially on the table, what we're trying to do is be very mature and not be parochial. When the legislative leaders met with the governor and he announced that he was going to come out with some recommendations, both with his executive order and things that would require legislative attention, we knew that some of these would be more challenging than others to find consensus on. You mentioned one, the road use tax fund issue, for example. But we also said, let's keep an open mind.
Which is paying the state troopers out of road money.
That's correct. And we know historically that it's been very challenging here in the legislature. But we said, let's go into the session keeping an open mind and not being parochial, because if the governor was able to take his pet peeve off the table, so to speak, and the legislative leaders were able to take their pet peeves off the table, and the committee chairs were, and pretty soon you'd have nothing left on the table. And so we decided, let's go on and say everything's on the table, given the enormity of the challenge that we face. And then as we work through the legislative process, we know that we'll be able to find consensus on some issues more easily than others. But right now, everything is on the table.
Representative Paulson, a couple of these ideas, like reducing the state vehicle fleet, requiring fewer managers per employee, some of these things are ideas Republicans have offered in the past to save money and that have been met with resistance. Are you
correct?
Happy that they're on the table now, or do you feel sort of like, well, we offered this before?
Absolutely, we're happy about that. They were the right decision then, they're the right decision now, and we appreciate the fact that they've been picked up. And that's, like I say, we'll continue to identify some more, and hopefully those will be given thoughtful consideration. You know, on the troopers, one thing I'd mention there, I mean, understand, moving the expense of the troopers from the general fund to the road use tax fund is not a reduction in spending. All it is a transference of the expenditure. You know, and especially at a time where the governor's even said we need more infrastructure investment, I don't understand why that would even be on the table. And again, it ends up transferring a whole bunch of road expenses onto the back of the property taxpayer, because chunk of that money will be backed up or go to the cities and the counties, and they're still going to have those expenditures, and the only place else they're going to have to go is the property taxpayer. So, you know, we're going to be watching out for those things.
Mm-hmm. Can I just respond briefly on road infrastructure issues? It's been my observation, and I don't think that Representative Paulson would dispute it, that those sort of issues in the legislature, for whatever reason, have always been handled in a bipartisan fashion. Every time there's been a road funding issue, it's been handled about 50-50, 50% Democrats, 50% Republicans. 3 years ago, we were facing in our road use tax fund a looming $200 million a year annual shortfall. And so in a bipartisan way, we put together the Time 21 proposal and passed that to try to close that gap
which
over time.
Which raised licensing and vehicle registration fees.
It slowed down the reduction of the annual registration fees. We got rid of the so-called urban cowboy exemption for pickup drivers. But regardless, it started to move in the direction to close that gap because of the priority that Democrats and Republicans have put on our road and infrastructure issues. And so one of the things, based upon the observations that I just spoke of, that these things have been done in a bipartisan way, it's certainly from the comments of Representative Paulson and some of the conversations we've had with people that work on infrastructure issues, that's one that will be you know, probably more challenging than others to find consensus on as we work with the governor on this proposal, because we just started this direction to help our road use tax fund, and we want to make sure we don't move in the opposite direction.
And that's accurate. Typically, the Transportation Committee, the Infrastructure Budget Subcommittee, those are relatively bipartisan bills, and I see no reason why that mindset doesn't continue.
You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building. My guest for the first half of the program, Democratic House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of Des Moines and Republican House Minority Leader Craig Paulson of Hiawatha. There's been some discussion of whether union legislation will resurface. And the reason I'm asking during this half of the program is it seems to be more difficult to adopt in the House, where the control of Democrats is tighter. And the Senate last year approved a couple of pro-union legislation that allowed for certain rights for workers, whether it be fair share, where the unions are allowed to pay charge non-union members a fee, whether it be some proposals where they can have a choice of doctor if they're injured on the job, things like that. Do you see any of those, Representative McCarthy, gaining traction this session, or do you still have members very concerned about that in districts where they're going to be up for re-election?
Well, citizens who happen to be members of a collective bargaining unit are still citizens of the state of Iowa, and so when we pass legislation, whether it's healthcare expansion or raising the minimum wage or reducing tuition or colleges, that benefits working men and women just like other folks. And so I guess the paradigm that I operate in may be different than others, but I don't look at things of whether it's a so-called union legislation or not. I don't even know what that means.
It means that the unions are up here knocking on your door asking for it.
But here's the let me tell you my observation. Unions are not a monolith. I've seen the different unions in a room, and if they can agree on something, that's a rare occurrence many times. You have teacher unions, and obviously they are concerned about teachers' salaries and things of that nature. You have corrections workers that might be organized. They might want to be able to expand their bargaining rights on maybe color of uniform for those that are outside in the guard tower. You have some DOT union workers that would like to be able to expand bargaining rights maybe for some toolboxes and tools. Some law enforcement groups would like to be able to bargain for weapons, and they have to pay for them out of their pocket. You have private sector unions, steel workers and others that would like to change the kind of goofy system we have in Iowa about lowest responsible bidder, where responsible really means nothing under Iowa law. And so you have people that are very well trained seeing jobs go to people who are really the lowest bidder, who then to subcontract it to then another subcontractor, and they want to see that change. So there is no monolith in terms of what is union legislation. Every group.
Well, you described several. Do you think any of what you described, whether it be new rights under collective bargaining, would be adopted this year?
They do tend to be very controversial because the modern Republican Party is not the Republican Party of the 1970s that, for example, established collective bargaining. Bob Rae was governor and the floor manager of that with Representative Bryce Oakley in the Iowa House. But make a long story short, will there be consensus on it? I don't know. It's difficult to see what percolates up. Last year, it was flood recovery, which created the impetus to try to do something on the lowest responsible bidder law, not involving private sector relationship, but basically to say as we embark on massive flood recovery, and if you are a contractor and you're going to be getting a government contract, what does responsible mean? And that's something that's still, I think, ripe for discussion. It's sitting with 50 votes right now, and I know there's negotiations occurring.
All right, thank you. We're going to take a quick break, and Representative Paulson, I'll let you respond when we come back. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. Good afternoon. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We want to ask you to join our conversation at 1-866-780-9100. Again, if you have a question for Representative McCarthy or Representative Paulson, please call us at 1-866-780-9100, or you can email a question at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Representative Paulson, are you concerned that there will be legislation that unions are requesting that will come through this session, or do you suspect that's dead for the year?
Well, I mean, I hope it's dead. I mean, first of all, for starters, the bill that Leader McCarthy was talking about, the prevailing wage bill and the lowest responsible bidder, I mean, what that bill would have done is basically just fix wages. It was a wage price fixing bill. It had nothing to do with capacity to actually complete the work, but that notwithstanding, you look at all of those bills, and the governor's office has brought up repealing Iowa's right to work law again as well. Every one of those bills, what they do is they make it harder to be an employer in the state of Iowa. What we need right now is employers investing in our state, investing in our workforce. We don't need to push them away. And you can show studies on both sides of the issue on whether they help or hurt, but this is what I know, is that employers that I have spoken to have told me they're not going to hire someone or they're looking at another state simply because of the discussion of these issues. So there's an Iowan or a host of Iowans out there somewhere who are not getting offered jobs right now because we're even talking about these issues. They need to go away.
Representative McCarthy, the Democrats are talking about protecting education, health care, and job creation programs. What is a job creation program that the government can have a hand in? Can the government create jobs or help create jobs?
Directly, no. The role of the government probably it's probably not as productive to focus as some sort of major effort for government creation of jobs, because let's be very blunt, most jobs are created in the private sector. And so can you have an atmosphere that's conducive to job creation? I know Forbes magazine says Iowa has a pretty good environment for job creation. MSNBC and others saying Iowa has a pretty good environment, whether it be lawsuit issues or things of that nature. But what government can do is what we did last year. It was controversial, but it is creating or retaining, I think, thousands of jobs. And that's because we were hit with the largest natural disaster I was ever faced. And as we did flood recovery work, we bonded for infrastructure, kind of moved us from 48th in the country in our level of bonding investment to 47th in the country in terms of lowest level of bonding.
And when we say bonding, we mean borrowing, largely.
Yeah, allowing people to have an investment. Investment bondholders under the promise that we're going to do certain infrastructure work, and then they're able to reap some proceeds in the long term. But it has created a lot of jobs, and we don't know when we're going to see the ripple effect, but we know that after the 93 floods, about an additional $215 million started to pump into the economy about a year and a half later as a result of all that infrastructure work, the purchase of all the materials and the people that were working. And so government is able to do some things sometimes with bonding and infrastructure work, but largely it's making sure that you provide an atmosphere. Sometimes tax credits can create jobs, but overall, jobs are created in the private sector, and you want to make sure that you're not too burdensome on the private sector.
Then what will you propose this session? Anything specifically on job creation or job retention? With over 115,000 Iowans? Is that roughly the figure we have now of mm-hmm. Iowans out of work?
Mm-hmm. Making sure that we don't increase taxes or create problems to hurt job creation is one of the first things we're going to not do. But in terms of as we analyze tax credits, we've never said we're going to be summarily wiping out tax credits here or there. As we analyze these tax credits, we may find some that are really working and creating jobs. We may be eliminating some and then transferring the savings from some we eliminate or suspend to others that we find that are working more and creating more jobs. And that's something that we're going to be looking at, particularly in our Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Paulson, the governor's task force on tax credits recommended the elimination of 8 tax credits, talked about capping certain tax credits and making sure that you couldn't give refunds to those companies that actually were due a refund after the tax credit. Is there any of that Republicans would support? I mean, are there certain tax credits as you look at it that just may not be effective?
Well, I mean,
because that is taxpayer money in the sense that
absolutely.
When it's given back in refunds, essentially.
Absolutely. And we need to go through and we need to look at those and we need to make sure that those particular tax credits or all the tax credits meet really two tests. One is we need to make sure they're conforming to the intent of the legislature when we originally passed it, make sure it's doing what it's supposed to do. And then the other thing is make sure there's a proper return on investment, for lack of a better expression. That's not really the measurement we'll use because it doesn't exist. But make sure that the taxpayers of Iowa are getting a proper return for that investment. We've not caucused on the particular pieces of the governor's proposal yet, so I don't know that Republicans have a formalized position on each individual piece. I mean, in a sentence, though, I mean, I think there's probably pieces we would agree with, pieces we disagree with, and pieces that we just need more detail on.
Mm-hmm. Representative Paulson, how much time this session will you be talking about a vote, a constitutional amendment on same-sex marriage, and asking for a vote in the House?
If there's 51 people who want to debate it, we'll debate it. I don't think that debate has to last more than 30, 40 minutes. And if there's not 51 people that want to debate it, then we won't be. But House Republicans believe Iowans should have an opportunity to define what marriage is in the state of Iowa. And the avenue to getting that done is starting with a resolution on the floor of the House or the Senate.
last session, Representative McCarthy efforts, Republican efforts to bring that up and attach that to other bills failed. Democrats held strong as a group and said no to that. Do you see any softening in that in your caucus? Are there members of the Democratic Party who would like to vote on that?
Last year, there was a proposal that was not timely filed, and so there was a procedural amendment offered to try to do what's called the Rule 60, which is bring a bill out of committee without it having been voted on. Of course, that doesn't mean it gets debated. It just means it goes to the clerk's calendar, having not been voted on at the committee level. So there was no substantive vote on the issue. It was a procedural issue. This issue first, and not trying to dodge the question, but it's one that I believe in, and that is people's the faith that they have or religious beliefs or ethical beliefs or moral beliefs that they bring to the issue. I respect those differences. And there's people in our caucus that have a variety of views on the topic, and there's people, I suppose, in the Republican caucus that have a variety of views on the topic. The debate seems to have boiled down to one side saying, let us vote, and the other side saying, well, this would put discrimination into the Constitution. In terms of the let us vote side, we saw this play out in a special election in Fairfield a couple months ago. One side said, let us vote. And the other candidate said, go ahead and vote. Because this November on the ballot is required by our Constitution. Every 10 years is a question on whether to call a constitutional convention if there's a desire to alter the Constitution. And then if that were, so that's this November. And then if that were the case, then the there would be a convention that would be immediately called. The legislative route, people are wanted to do it. Some of it gets into more partisan politics, I think, to move over the next 3 years, this General Assembly, the following General Assembly, and then a vote of the people. And I think this year, given our budget situation, talking to both Republicans and Democrats, getting ourselves bogged down in a divisive social issue is probably not something that we're going to be doing.
Well, let me ask you, Representative McCarthy, before we take a break then, on that issue, would it be politically difficult if you allowed a vote on same-sex marriage, if that went to a constitutional vote, let's say for some reason that it becomes on the ballot, do you think that would be bad for Democrats in the sense of voter turnout? I mean, would that be bad down the ticket for Democrats if that were on the ballot in a couple of years?
I don't think so. I mean, there's always short-term political considerations that one may take to a given issue, and then there's long-term considerations. This issue, to me, is getting less and less of a what I would call a wedge issue. I think, for example, the decision happened. There was a lot of uproar, but I think people are realizing now, several months later, that those who had good marriages prior to this decision, that those marriages are still good. Those who had bad marriages prior to the decision, they're still bad. Nothing has changed. Life has gone on. You know, the boogeyman of gay marriage, the gays are coming. I just think that people are starting to realize, well, life's gone on. Iowa's still the same place, and I see much less intensity on this issue. So I'm not sure. And by the way, this issue was red hot. Just down in a special election in Fairfield, Iowa, and a Democrat won in a seat where John McCain was victorious just the prior year. So I'm not sure that it has political legs right now.
Representative Paulson, we only have about a minute left, but is there just one issue that Republicans will focus largely on this session that you want to be heard on, even in the minority?
Well, I mean, there's three things we've been talking about. One is making sure we pass a reasonable and responsible budget that's not balanced on the back of the property taxpayer or taxpayers in general. We've got, as you mentioned, 115,000 plus or minus Iowans out of work right now. We need to be finding opportunities to encourage employers to invest in our state. We need to stop talking about any job killing proposals. And again, the property taxpayer, very, very concerned about where we're at with that. I think over the next 12 to 18 months, the taxpayers of this state are really going to start to feel that pinch as a result of the decisions that were made in Des Moines.
Gentlemen, thank you both for being on with us.
Thank you.
Take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's 10:30. This is Iowa Public Radio and The Exchange. I'm Janine Beck. We're live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building. We've switched guests this half hour, and now joining me at the table, Democratic Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall of Council Bluffs and Republican Senator Steve Kettering of Lakeview. Gentlemen, both, thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Welcome. Opening day of the legislative session. You've given your speeches. Now you settle down for the hard work, an abbreviated session of hopefully only 80 days to save money. Senator Gronstall, what will be the number one priority of the session?
Obviously, the number one priority is to pass a balanced budget without raising taxes in the state. Probably the most important component of that for the long term isn't actually the budget itself. It's our effort at state government reorganization. We've had a committee that has met over the summer and fall, a bipartisan committee of Democrats and Republicans, and we have worked through a set of things that we think can save the state significant resources. So that's probably the most important piece of the budget puzzle that we have to deal with this session, and we're pleased that so far that's been a bipartisan effort, unanimous. The recommendations came out of the committee unanimously, and we think there's significant savings to be had in state government.
Senator Kettering, what is your biggest concern going into this session? Republicans in the Senate, only 18 of you compared to 32 Democrats. You don't have a lot of ability to stop legislation, so you have to be vocal in your concerns about certain pieces of legislation. What would your one concern be as you head into this?
Well, we will continue to offer Republican solutions to job creation in this state. And with 100,000 plus Iowans out of work, we think that's an important area to focus on. And we'll offer those ideas and move forward.
What is government job creation? I mean, how can the state help in job creation?
It comes in the taxation and regulatory aspect of it, and we just want to make it easier for employers to locate in Iowa and to hire employees in Iowa.
The tax credit task force or panel met last week and recommended eliminating 8 tax credits. It also talked about capping tax credits, making it so that they can't be transferred from one group or one entity to another. A couple of significant changes to the way Iowa operates its tax credit system. Is that important? Do you think there will at least be some movement on that, or will it be one of those reports that goes up on a dusty shelf?
Well, I think clearly it won't be a report that goes up on a dusty shelf. These plans will not get dusty. We intend to take a good, hard look at our tax credit programs, a variety of them. Obviously, the film credit fiasco has created some energy to look at film credits. We think we need to look at all of those. You know, it's an interesting mechanism. We put in place these tax credits for job creation. Once you put them in place, they almost never get a review to find out if they're still meeting their objectives in terms of what they do. So we're gonna demand a lot. I can guarantee that by the end of this session, you'll see a lot more accountability. Iowa taxpayers will be able to know what the tax credits are, who benefits from them, and whether or not they actually create jobs in this state. So we're going to take a very long, hard look at those tax credits. It's an interesting mechanism. When we're short on money, we're forced to do things like across-the-board cuts to balance the budget, things that fund local schools or health care for senior citizens. All those things are subject to the across-the-board cuts. These job creation efforts don't even get reviewed, and so I think there's a real interest in looking for a way to make them subject to the across-the-board cuts as well.
You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. If you have a question this afternoon, join us at 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. What do you want from your lawmakers this session? What priority is your priority this legislative session? Senator Kettering, one of the proposals from that tax credit group was to require a review or a sunset every 5 years for these tax credits to say, okay, they go away unless you reauthorize them in the legislature. Is that the right thing to do?
I think there's going to be a broad bipartisan interest in taking a look at the tax credits and what it might be. And absolutely, I think a sunset provision can be taken a look at it. Perhaps we should do that with many of the programs we have and not just the tax credits. It doesn't hurt to go back and take a second look.
All right. I'm going to talk about some of the pieces of legislation that did not make it last year that people are talking about on the sidelines. And I realize they're not going to be the prominent legislation because the budget's going to be the sole focus largely. But there's going to be a lot of time while you put together a budget, and members are going to be working on other pieces of legislation. You did not approve a bicycle bill of rights last year, although the Senate looked very hard at that issue.
The Senate actually
passed
it.
I mean, do you think that there will be an attempt since that time? There have been a couple of high-profile accidents, at least one fatality, to revive that legislation. Senator Gronstall?
Well, I really think the ball is in the House's court on that. I think the Senate did pass it. I think a law that you know, clearly delineates the rights of people to the roads. I think that's an important step forward in terms of helping people understand they need to share the roads. So I'd like to see that, but the ball is really in the House's court.
What about restricting cell phone use or texting while driving? That was in committee in the House, but that didn't make it anywhere. Does the Senate have any interest in that?
My guess is it's going to happen. I feel fairly confident. Bunches of states are doing this. All of the research indicates texting while driving is worse than being drunk while driving. I think it's incredibly likely that the legislature will pass a ban on texting this year.
Just texting?
Well, I think there are other nuances to that. Are we going to require hands-free when it comes to cell phones, things like that? I think that's the part of the process that's always fascinating, the legislative process. How do you get 150 people to kind of come to the same agreement on exactly what it is we'll pass? But I think we'll struggle through that and find a consensus on exactly what we're going to do. But texting while driving, I'm confident by the end of this session that'll be outlawed.
All right. Let's talk to Al in Des Moines. Al, thanks for calling the Exchange today. What's your question?
I'd like to mention that the debate about the Constitution Amendment probably hasn't touched upon the most important part. I'm not so much interested in the social issue as I am about following the law. I think a good argument against amending the Constitution is, why bother? When it gets into the federal court, it'll be declared unconstitutional under the 14th Amendment of the Bill of Rights of the federal Constitution. And to put a discriminatory clause of that nature on same-gender marriage in the Iowa Constitution isn't the final word. It will still have to pass muster under the 14th Amendment of the Federal Bill of Rights, and I don't think it will. So my argument is, why not use the argument against the Constitution Amendment here? Why bother? It's going to be held unconstitutional eventually anyway.
All right, Al, let's get them to respond. Gentlemen, he's speaking about an issue that we spoke about earlier in the program, vis-a-vis the constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage in Iowa. Let me start with you, Senator Kettering. How much time will Republicans spend asking for a vote on that? And what about Al's argument that if you take it up the food chain, up to the Supreme Court, that it'll be ruled unconstitutional anyway?
Well, Republicans will pursue that issue this year. We will offer the resolution. We will ask for a vote to move it on so that there is a vote of the people in the state of Iowa. What a federal Supreme Court might ultimately decide, I guess, is really a separate question. That is the process. And I think the people in Iowa deserve a vote. If they vote to do that, if there's a challenge that would go to the Supreme Court, it would go to the Supreme Court.
All right. Senator Gronstall, you have said not on my watch.
I've said pretty consistently the Supreme Court decision was well-researched, well-documented, well-written. And I'm not about on my watch to put discrimination in the Constitution. The Constitution is really designed to be a place that guarantees people's rights. This would be the first time I know of where it actually denies people their rights.
Let's go back to the phones. If you have a question or comment, join us this afternoon at 1-866-780-9100, or you can email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Eric in Cedar Rapids, what is your question today? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good afternoon. When you were looking at cutting the budget, why not look at some of the spending increases that they did just last year, specifically adding daycare for four-year-olds all across the state for free? That's something that just started. It's only been in place for 1 year. You could cancel that and save millions.
Eric, thanks for the question. Let me pose that first to Senator Gronstall. I think the governor would fight you on that, but is that the right thing to do, to repeal you know, all-day preschool for four-year-olds.
Well, by the way, it's not all-day preschool. It's a preschool program in our K through 12 education system. I think there is probably some interest in the legislature. We had a goal that we established a few years ago, and that was to get to a situation where every four-year-old had access to a quality preschool program. And we were going to make sure that happened over 4 years. We probably won't reach that goal. We cut back a little on what we were going to provide to it last year, and we'll probably cut back even more in terms of the expansion of that program. But that said, there are thousands of kids in Iowa that get a better opportunity because they have a quality preschool program. When it comes to balancing the budget, I think it's important not to put at risk a generation of kids' opportunities for a better life. And so I think I think while we may slow down our effort to get to access for every kid, every four-year-old in the state, we still want to move towards that goal.
Senator Kettering, concerns about that program? I know that when it was established, there were concerns about it. What has been the reaction in communities that you've seen?
It's been disappointing as it's been administered. Some school districts have not been eligible to receive the money. Others have received it and competed directly with private nonprofit preschools that are now struggling to keep their doors open. I didn't think anything was off the table as far as the budget. I still don't think anything is off the table with regard to the budget. And this preschool is something that we need to take a look at. Maybe set back a little bit, either set it aside or slow it down, so that we can take a look at it. And when times are perhaps a little more favorable, you then can advance the agenda in an appropriate manner rather than having winning schools and losing schools.
Okay. Let's talk to Tom. Tom, you have a question today. You're listening to The Exchange. This is about an issue that we spoke earlier in the program about, funding state trooper salaries out of the road use tax fund, which is money generated from the gas tax, also the tax or the registration fees for vehicles and license plates and things like that. Tom, thanks for listening to The Exchange.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Senator Gronstahl and Senator Kettering, I have a question for both of you. And are you in favor or not in favor of taking $55 million or $51 million or whatever the governor's proposed out of the rebuilding fund to fund state troopers' payrolls when I feel we've got, and a lot of people I talk to and I work with, feel we've got overlapping security agencies between the county sheriff, the Homeland Security, INS, town and city police, traffic cameras, whatever. And we were driving on really bad roads, at least over here in Van Horn, from here to Cedar Rapids, from here north to Waterloo. They're all in need of repair, and bridges especially, but even the shoulders. And if it's an economic downturn and we have a 10% across-the-board cut, why would the state troopers be not taken up in that? Maybe we could cut down on some bureaucracy and get some people out from behind their desk. I know everybody's got an important job, but this is it's like a company. When things are going bad, you have layoffs. Why would they be specialized and not affected by the economic downturn? And I'd like to have both your views on whether that's a good idea or not.
Thanks for the call, Tom. We'll ask both of them. But Senator Gronstahl, he addressed you initially, so let me ask you, is it reasonable to take trooper salaries out of road money, or is that a bad idea considering the DOT report just 2 years ago that suggested there was billions of dollars in shortfall in road construction over the next 20 years?
I think those are all very legitimate questions. That's why 150 legislators are here starting today. Is to evaluate all of those kinds of things relative to the state budget. I think the state patrol is incredibly important. I also think infrastructure is incredibly important. And we've got to look for a way to balance this year's budget. We're going to do that. We're going to make some tough decisions. I'm sure in the end there will be plenty of room for criticism. So they're very tough challenges. I'd also say, I think law enforcement is incredibly important, and we are down to the level we were in the 60s in terms of the number of state troopers. We have very serious times. So some effort to make sure that there are enough state troopers on the road, and that's part of the function of the system as well, is to make sure the roads are supervised well. So we're going to struggle through that and try and make the best decisions we can. But I also say I come from a community where the Council Bluffs, where they're scheduled to rebuild the interstate around our community. Leaving communities torn up for years or even decades to repair roads is a significant economic drain on a community. And so I'd say both of these things are incredibly important, and it's the legislature's job to struggle through and make some tough choices and have 150 people reach a consensus on what the things are that are the most important. We're going to work through that this session. I appreciate the gentleman's concerns about that on the phone, and I completely understand him. I share many of his concerns.
Senator Kettering, has your group of Republicans in the Senate discussed this? Do you know where your colleagues stand on this issue?
We've not established a caucus position whatsoever on that. It's an act that's been done in the past. Mm-hmm. It's not without precedent that be taken from the road use funds. It does impact our cities and counties who also receive monies from that same fund. And another observation I'd make in addition to the comments have been made, I think it was headlines in a local newspaper here recently that Iowa just concluded a very successful year as far as deaths on the road. So we had very safe highways, and Iowans have been doing a good job, and the patrol's been doing a good job. Their numbers are down, and it has been difficult. There's been a post-closing up in my area at Cherokee, and those troopers are being split between Denison and Spencer. So there's some efficiencies being driven. It is an issue that will be debated, and as I mentioned earlier, I think it is one of those things on the table.
You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Janine Beck. We're live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building. My guests are Republican Senator Steve Kettering of Lakeview and Democratic Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl of Council Bluffs. We're taking your calls at 1-866-780-9100. Senator Kettering, Senator Jack Kibbe, the president of the Senate, a Democrat, this morning praised Governor Culver for not calling lawmakers back into special session, but rather taking his own authority in administering a 10% across-the-board budget cut. Many Republicans did not support that. What did you think of those remarks this morning?
Well, Senator Kibbe is certainly supportive of Governor Culver. From our position, we would have preferred to have been called back into session, and rather than taking an across-the-board cut, take a look at some areas and make those selective cuts as opposed to just an across-the-board. And that wasn't done. I don't know at this point what the majority leader's intent are, whether we're going to address 2010 in a separate bill or whether we're going to combine it with 2011 or whether we're going to have no bill to address 2010. So I'd yield the floor at that point to the majority leader, and perhaps he can tell us which one of those strategies he's going to follow.
Well, is there going to be any? I mean, he implemented the across-the-board budget cut. He said if there were money available, there might be certain priority areas he'd like to see money restored to once you came into session. But I guess I had been under the impression that wasn't going to happen. Is there going to be some money restored in certain budgets?
There may in fact be some restorations, but those will be exceedingly limited, and we have told people that'll be exceedingly limited.
What would those be?
We talked about workforce development. If there's more people in the unemployment lines, making sure that those lines don't end up unreasonably long. We talked about children's health care, and we talked about public safety. Back when the governor did his across-the-board cut. So those are options open to us. But I'd also say we have said to people coming to us looking for fixes for 2010, we have kind of said to them, you know, if you get us to listen and decide to help with 2010, there's going to be a little bit of a tendency to say you're last in line when it comes to 2011. And we have very real, very serious challenges for 2010. So my advice to people is don't spend a lot of your energy trying to fix the pain of 2010, because there's more coming in 2011, and we ought to you ought to focus on that rather than on fiscal 10.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to squeeze in a call. I'm probably silly for trying to do it, but Barbara has a really good question from Ames. Barbara, really quickly, what's your question?
My question is simply, when will state government consider lowering the number of counties in Iowa from 99 to something more manageable, like 40?
All right. Thanks, Barbara. Senator Gronstall, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, boy. I will try and give you a quick answer on this because I know we're running out of time. My argument to people has always been, it's not so much about how many counties you have. It's about how you provide services. And when you actually start to talk about people's citizenship, gee, I'm not going to be from Pottawatomie County anymore, they get real nervous. If you tell them, we've got nine counties working together to deliver this service, you know, real estate, record keeping, pay your taxes, whatever, and you can still walk into your courthouse, but the system is much more efficient. I think it's more important to talk about efficiently delivering the services than to fall back on, gee, let's try and abolish where somebody lives kind of conceptually.
Senator Kettering, is 99 counties the right number, or is there a better number?
I don't know that there's any right number. 28 EU agreements are proliferate across the state in which they share services with one or two adjoining counties and deliver those services. It's still difficult to get to the courthouse for some folks, and it's moving. On the other hand, it's moving into the electronic age when a lot of us do transmittals electronically. So I don't see any movement in this session, at least, to go to fewer counties.
All right. Gentlemen, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Happy
Senator Gronstall,
here.
Senator Kettering, enjoy the session. You've been listening to The Exchange. Remember, we'll be live every Monday at noon from the Law Library here at the State Capitol Building, and we'll appreciate your calls. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Jeff Schmidt, and today by Ben Kiefer. We have technical support from Dennis Reese and John Pemble, and also assistance from David Henderson. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange are available at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. This is The Exchange, a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Janine Beck. Thanks for listening.